What do you get when you combine a very talented poet, a powerful African woman, and strong opinions? You get today's guest, and she's no joke. Settle down and settle in as we discuss whatever she wants to talk about on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes. As always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah. Poet and writer Laini Mataka is with us today, and I'm curious, what is psychological rape?
Well, good morning. Psychological rape, well, let's deal with physical first. If we're talking physical rape, then we're actually talking about one person taking a part of their body and forcing it into the body of another person. Right. Mm-hmm. If we're talking psychological, then we're saying that someone is taking their worldview, their thoughts and their feelings, mm-hmm. and forcing them into another person and not giving that person any kind of choice over whether to accept them or deny them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Patrice O'Neill, a late comic, he said that women rape men psychologically by asking questions such as, What was his magic question? Do you love me? As a way of then saying, as a way of then being given permission to say she loves him. What you got anything on that?
I can't see the term rape being used in any way, shape, or form. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely kind of like ridiculous to me. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And what he is talking about, poor communications between men and women,
mm-hmm.
all right? Not only that, but the insecurity on the parts of both. You're so insecure, you have to set up a situation first,
mm-hmm.
and then just to find out how somebody feels about you.
In order to reveal
you,
how
yes,
you
feel. Can't just straight up saying it,
mm-hmm.
okay? And if you don't get the response that you want from them, then that's going to alter perhaps whatever it was you were about to share about your own self and mm-hmm. your own feelings,
mm-hmm.
you know? And people are so much better than that.
Well, they can be.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can.
There's another concept around, I guess you could call it psychological rape, and that's not imposing, snooping or that sort of thing. I heard a story years ago where a barber was talking to a guy, telling him that he in some ways raped his woman by snooping through her and following her. He violated her boundaries. And apparently there was something to find. You know, she had another relationship or something like that. But he was telling her that was a violation of her boundaries. What do you think of that?
That is a violation.
Mm-hmm.
I've never gone through a man's pockets, drawer, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Any man that I've ever dealt with, even on a friendly level, knows that you could leave me in your space indefinitely, mm-hmm. and I don't touch anything.
Right.
Okay. I can't stand the idea of doing that. I don't mm-hmm. understand doing it. Here we go. My grandmother raised me. My grandmother wouldn't go in my room when I wasn't home. I think that's
really?
Where I got that from.
Uh-huh. Wow.
She started to give me that respect even as a child,
mm-hmm.
you know, even if I had something that belonged to her.
Mm-hmm.
She told me one time she was going in the room and she said, the energy, something just said no. And she just backed right up
mm-hmm.
and came back out the room because she knew I was a very private person.
Wow.
I've often thought of, in terms of dealing with my children, I've thought of, instead of not going in their room, and my only child that I could imagine, you know, having something that, I don't know, I mean, you know, having something that she wouldn't want found or that individual wouldn't want found is, she's 18, and I've never gone through her stuff, but I could see setting the stage by saying I might look through your stuff, but I can't imagine looking through her stuff. I mean, I could just see setting, or maybe your email or your phone, and just saying, just so I can know what's going on with you. But I could see that.
I think you have the right to do that.
Okay.
I don't consider that a violation. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's something that you do all the time, every mm-hmm. single moment. I could see you doing it when you have some kind of doubt about where her mind is at that moment. Uh-huh. Is she all right? If mm-hmm. you have some kind of concerns, then I could see you going forth to do that.
Mm-hmm. But just casually, randomly, any old time. No, right. No. Unjustified.
Yeah, you have to respect your children too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like casual would be the most, if I thought something was going on that concerned me, I suspect I would leave it at talking to her.
Okay.
Just talking to her and not feeling like I have to corner her by looking through her phone. But I think a more casual, just, baby girl, you know, let me see your phone. And just looking through her phone and not even really caring mm-hmm. or having judgment on what I found, but just to see what her cyber existence is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really where okay. I would
it's
come.
Worth doing.
Uh-huh.
Every now and then it's worth doing
uh-huh.
because you can't see every single thing going on in her head,
mm-hmm.
you know, and given the kind of things that are going on today, and especially online,
mm-hmm.
you might want to tip in every now and then and peek through the window and see uh-huh. what's going on.
And mm-hmm. let her know
and
that I might.
Exactly. And yeah. you're a parent. That's not a violation. That's love.
Yeah.
Jeff, you got a daughter that I believe is in her 20s, right?
Correct.
What do you think about what I just said?
I think that trust is more important in a relationship, whether it's familiar or between two people who are not related,
mm-hmm.
than what could be distrust or jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
I would never look at my kid's phone.
Mm-hmm.
I never look at my wife's phone unless she asks me to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that trust and confidence in the relationship is more important. And when you're dealing with a kid, I've raised them to be good people,
mm-hmm.
at least by my standards. Mm-hmm. If they deviate from that, that's on them,
mm-hmm.
but I trust them,
mm-hmm.
so I won't. Mm-hmm. And again, they've never given me reason to. There's probably stuff in there I wouldn't like if I found it.
Right.
But, you know, maybe I'm head in the sand, but I just, they need to know that their father, their parents trust them
mm-hmm.
to make those good decisions and to not do that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Have they made mistakes? Of course, we all have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's called life.
Here, here.
Yeah.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us. And if via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super-duper co-host, Nancy Goldring.
Hi, Frank.
Hey, the consummate generalist is in the house.
Indeed.
I usually, before I introduce a guest.
Yes.
When I introduce a guest, I usually I stick to the facts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get too much into what I think just yet.
Oh, okay.
But this, I can't do that today.
Oh, you know, this, awesome.
Today's guest is fun, serious, and intense.
Okay.
She's opinionated, smart, and powerful. And she's a friend to me and my family.
Okay, awesome.
She was born, as she puts it, and miseducated in Baltimore, Maryland. So you all have something
that
in
common.
Yes, yes. I don't know.
Born and miseducated in Baltimore, no doubt.
Her work appears in 7 anthologies and has been, as she once again colloquially captures, hijacked, spread around, and bootlegged for several decades. She's the author of numerous books, including Never as Strangers, Restoring the Queen, Being a Strong Black Woman Can Get You Killed, and The Prince of Kokomo. She also has an album called Black Ivory. A recipient of the Walking in the Footsteps of the Ancestor Award and the African Consciousness Award, and an inductee into the International Literary Hall of Fame for Writers of African Descent. Mm. So, if you, like me, want to know how she views and discusses the scarcity of quality black men, why she believes that it's important for men to like the women they sleep with and not sleep with the women they don't like, and about simply the death of the strong black woman, then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with the one and only Laini Mataka. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
Before we get too deep into today's subject matter, I want to check in to see what's going on in the news. And Mama Laini, please don't be bashful. We certainly want you to weigh in.
I need you to weigh in.
Yeah, yeah, we got you here, so we need you to weigh
in. Yes.
I got a quote.
Okay.
I got a quote. This
okay.
isn't really the news, but I want to hear what you guys think about it.
All right.
We do so much. We run so quickly. The situation is difficult, and many people say, don't just sit there, do something. But doing more things may make the situation worse. So you should say, don't just do something, sit there. Sit there, stop, be yourself first, and begin from there. That's a quote by, I'm going to botch the name, but
it's not her.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with him?
Slightly.
Her?
Slightly.
All right. Enough to know how to
say his
pronounce
name.
The name. Yes. Okay. So, you know, since you got something to say about the name, what you got to say about the quote?
Actually, that is a practice that I am somewhat familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
This notion of sit still and definitely sit still long enough to collect yourself and be yourself, not like overreact or try to affect the situation in a false way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, I believe, I don't know where it comes from, but that taking no action is mm-hmm. also an action.
Absolutely.
And so I have often...
And a valuable one.
And yes. Yeah. And I have often found that it's not so much about taking no action, it's giving the time for an appropriate action to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And so often I'll find myself just saying, slow your roll, slow your roll. And often I have to slow my roll a lot. My roll has to get a lot slower than I want it to, because mm-hmm. I want to jump right in and do or say something.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably, if I wait, the time will bubble up to the surface at the most unexpected of times for me to say whatever it is that I have to say or do. And it lands with so much more impact, and I don't have to be stressed or forceful. I can just quietly say what there is for me to say with love on balance, and things shift.
Mm-hmm.
They do shift. Yes.
Mama Laini?
I can't see this in any other terms but struggle for African autonomy, because
mm-hmm.
everything I look at is kind of that way.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yes, we all need to do something, all right? But as far as I'm concerned, the greatest victories, the greatest defeats, and all the so-called doing is all internal. Everything else is an echo. Right.
Mm.
So when we're talked about activism is inside. Okay. Sometimes maybe we can go to a demonstration, or maybe you can go do a little help, you know, somewhere physically. But inside, that's the one you're carrying with you
all day long. So all day long, every single day, you're trying to make the right decision about something, mm-hmm. okay? And ultimately, those right decisions will lead to whatever work you decide to do for our people in our community, you know? So, mm-hmm. but to sit and do nothing, don't sit around and do that too long.
Right.
Okay? And because our problems are so immense, don't be paralyzed by that. Mm-hmm. Find something tiny that you can do and that you do well, you know? Don't worry about the size of it. Don't worry about whether other people know you did it, mm-hmm. You know you did it, and you know why, so do it. Do it until you can't do it anymore.
The concept around worrying about whether other people know you've done it, and I've been thinking about this recently, because what comes to mind is charity. Mm-hmm. And I have a basic... I'm playing with a basic concept around if it's charity, if other people know you did it, if it's really charitable. To me, charity feels like, I'm not saying it is, but it feels like it's charitable when you just do it and you don't even care if anyone else knows you've done it. And it's very possible no one else will ever know mm-hmm. that you've done it. The mm-hmm. only person that knows is you. That's what feels like true
authentic
charity.
Yeah. I agree. If you're running for accolades, you're wasting your time. You're blowing your blessing in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I think that quality of giving mm-hmm. gives you an opportunity to release yourself, to unburden yourself from this need to be thanked. Mm-hmm. Often the best, what do they say, no good deed goes unpunished.
For real.
And I have found it necessary, actually, to get in the habit of giving and expecting nothing in return, because that creates a kind of inner turmoil mm-hmm. of, oh my God, I've been so good to that person. They didn't do this for me. They didn't do that for me. Or to limit how you yourself can receive a blessing or charity by thinking there has to be some direct link between, well, if I do something for you, then you have to do something for me. It is quite possible that in being generous with you, someone else
will be generous
to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't want, it may be more generous to me than you can be. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, hey, let it all go.
And that, I've been also recently thinking about the concept of coaching. I feel like mm-hmm. everybody can coach mm-hmm. somebody. Mm-hmm. And I don't, maybe it's happening in the world informally, but I think that there's a gap of where, how valuable we see ourselves to, I guess, the next man who may appreciate whatever it is we bring and how we can connect with that person. Like, there's something that I do that someone can benefit from if they were to hang around me or if I were to coach or mentor them. And you too, and you, Mama Lainey, and you, Jeff, there's something that we can all coach someone around. And there's something that we could all benefit from being coached on. That's just one of those other.
Well, Mama Lainey coaches people in writing, right?
In a small way, but
yeah.
In that everyday sense, we all do it. Mm-hmm. We do it every day, and we do it with whoever we are in contact with at that particular time. We don't officially announce it. We don't officially or consciously think of it like, oh, I'm mentoring right now. Mm-hmm. No. It's the flow of reciprocity right. between mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's almost as if there's only one air you can breathe. So you're taking your turn at it. You let it out. I'm taking my turn at it. It's as if you were using borrowed breath even. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. And you can't put a value on it because you don't know how valuable it is per person, you know? Mm-hmm. But yes, we coach all the time, and I think we need to be a little bit more deliberate about it. Mm-hmm. You know, when our self-esteem is low, we don't think of ourselves as coaching anybody because we don't even think of ourselves as being that high up in the first place. Mm-hmm. Okay. But you are doing that. So if you accept something higher about yourself, you can give even more and even better and even more efficiently, probably. You know?
Oh, I like
this
that.
Is pretty amazing, actually. I don't know if the three of you realize it, but everything you've just said, society has taken a drastic turn to the opposite. And I'm going to work backwards. Everything you write is coaching. I learn more from the written word. And again, it's internal. Mm-hmm. I don't pick up your poem and say I'm going to learn something from it, but I do. Mm-hmm. And take it with me. More importantly, kids today will join a team and get a trophy for participation. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. To quote Chris Rock, you're supposed to participate. Okay? Just showing up does not mean I get a star on my chest or an award. That's earned. Mm-hmm. However, what you all just were intimating is that is the exact opposite, is that you're supposed to participate and be out there mm-hmm. and doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, when it happened, I don't know. But as a coach, I want every kid to participate. And they're going to. That's why they signed up to do that. Mm-hmm. And that motivation has to be instilled early on. Goes beyond sports. Mm-hmm. Goes beyond reading a poem. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about every relationship you're going to have in dealing in society. And to take this exponentially in another direction, don't even get me started on politics. Mm-hmm. And how America is viewed by the rest of the world and all of that stuff in terms of participation.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say it's Pollyanna-ish, but it certainly is because you just, all three of you described a perfect world.
Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Well, I think when I think about what you said about the kids playing sports, some of that is about taking this notion, taking the, I don't want to say the competitive spirit out of sports, but evidently, somewhere along the way, it can get so ridiculous that you have kids that maybe aren't as, I don't know, athletic or proficient at a game as other kids, but they're still just children playing. And so when you start kind of aggrandizing a few, maybe theoretically at the expense of the others, then it's like, well, you know, I'm not as good as Johnny or, you know, whoever. And so why am I doing this? And I think somewhere along the way, and definitely in my understanding of coaching and a lot of other things, this idea of the value of a person just being there, holding space, I think is what we call it now, for the possibility of some outcome has its value, has its merit. And but that is definitely, I don't know, maybe 20 years old. That's mm-hmm. And it does have consequences because then you have people thinking that just because they were there, they were a contribution. Now, were they? Yes. You know, talk to advertisers. We just want to get your attention. If we get your attention, we can take it from here. And maybe a lot gets lost in terms of people having authentically contributing something besides showing up. Because trust me, I show up a lot of places I don't want to. And people care that I came. And I didn't think I did anything. But they cared that I came. I didn't get a trophy necessarily. But it meant something to me to know that ultimately in the eyes of the other person, I didn't waste my time. Because in my mind, it was a waste of time. I don't want to do this. I don't want to go to this. I don't want to do this. And I'm like, oh, just go. And, you know, but on the field of life.
You got to show up.
And
first.
Perform. You got to show up and perform. Because like just showing up.
Something. Yeah, you got to show up.
You don't get a paycheck for just being on time. You got to perform. And that's kind of the
Well, that's what I thought of when you said that. I said, well, that's like being on time to work. Like you should get some kind of prize. No, you should be on time to work.
Yeah.
But yet, it's doing the job that they pay you for.
Correct.
So.
Two things come to mind, and that's Tom Brady.
Okay.
Do you know who he is?
Only vaguely. I think I know more about the other guy.
He's arguably the greatest quarterback of all time.
Okay, okay.
And he is, he's still playing. So he could be greater than he's considered now. He's with the New England Patriots.
Okay,
and,
okay.
But in college, he rode the bench.
Show up. Okay, okay.
He rode the bench in college. And if you were to have evaluated him then as a player,
mm-hmm.
you know, he would have been in
How
some
did
ways
he get
a nothing.
In the pros?
Well, I don't. I mean, you know, he got drafted, I guess, or made it into the pros some kind of way. Drew Bledsoe, the starting quarterback for the Patriots, got injured. He got in, and he's been in ever since. But my point is, every player. You could be a great player next season based on you learning what's going on the field. They something you could be bringing can be it can lead to an incredible next season. So even if you're not getting a trophy this season, you may get one next season based on what you did this season or what you may be absorbing this season.
The cumulative effects of
your involvement. So it's and then that leads into also another trophy that's given out is the most improved player.
Mm-hmm.
And and that's a valuable trophy. That's something that a player who's not that good can strive for. And there's also, I think, like a spirit. You know, there's the team leader. The team leader isn't necessarily the best. Well, I don't know about professional sports, but just sports.
Got it.
The team leader isn't necessarily the best player, but he may be the person that galvanizes or brings it all together.
Yes.
So there are lots of different
things to acknowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
Attributes to acknowledge.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Ways of being valuable on a team, even when you're not, you know, when you're not posting points or, you know, that's.
Well, Mama Laini made a comment. You said, find out what it is that you love and what works about who you are and do it till the wheels fall off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, that's what you're saying is being rewarded. These qualities that people have that may not be games, may not materialize on the field in terms of actual points gained.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they do translate into sort of the energy and the momentum that wins the game or keeps the team intact.
Okay. All of that said, Mama Laini, we're going to go to one of your poems.
This is from the book, The Prince of Kokomo, and the poem is The Widow Mommies. Meticulously coiffed and stretching denim to the limit, they travel in manicured packs as if goaded by some imperceptible force, pushing BMW strollers decked with gadgetry and designed for pageantry. They steer their squirming trophies straight into a future that's walking backwards. When their offspring cry, they nurse them with screams left over from their truncated youth. The journey of the sun from east to west always catches them trespassing on somebody else's dream come true. Wherever they are, amusement parks spring up, liquor stores sing, and Chinese joints dance. Their daily revelations revolve around a blunt, big enough to blunt all pain. Their gossip is cyclical and all-inclusive. Their estrogen keeps the air in a chokehold, while on the other side of the world, across the street, the absentee daddies anoint themselves with 40s, noses and tails already pointing towards something new.
Okay.
Wow.
So I'm going to go right to, you're a DC transplant from Baltimore.
From Baltimore.
What does Baltimore mean to you? Because there's a lot of Baltimore in that poem.
Oh,
and a lot of
man.
DC. So, but we're going to keep, I know Baltimore is your heart. It's
Baltimore's home.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore was good to me. I grew up in a low income neighborhood where the people had houses, little teeny houses, but they owned their houses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The projects were a few blocks away. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. We cleaned our streets. All right. The children had a sense of community and unity.
When you say we cleaned our street, that
means
the residents.
Us the children, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Us the children cleaned our streets.
Okay.
You know, and people from other neighborhoods, you couldn't come in there and do dirt. You couldn't come in there and hurt somebody. You just could not bring that kind of energy mm-hmm. into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of community that's not there anymore because we're being relocated too quickly and too often these days, mm-hmm. right? So nowadays, children don't have the slightest idea what that's about. My oldest friend, we go back, we were 8 years old. We're still in each other's lives, mm-hmm. big time, mm-hmm. okay? She lived around the corner, okay? So that's what Baltimore is to me. I came to D.C. because as a poet, I needed it. Mm-hmm. I kind of wore Baltimore out, mm-hmm. and I needed someplace bigger. I came straight into D.C. They took me with open arms. I didn't have to come here and prove myself. It's as if they, whatever I carried with me, they mm-hmm. accepted it already. And I came out all right here. Now I can't wait to leave D.C. and go someplace else. And what I do hate was The Wire.
Really?
I hate what the concept of The Wire did to my home. Yeah. Anytime I'm traveling and somebody said, where are you from? Baltimore. Oh, The Wire. No. Mm-hmm. No. Those neighborhoods you see in The Wire were all thriving when I was young. Mm-hmm. Okay? They weren't just like that, okay? But of course, they were neglected by the owners, mm-hmm. you know, of the property, and became these ugly areas where people start to sell drugs. But it was not like that as I was coming up, and I don't want people to think that it was like that forever. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it happened.
Okay? What about, tell me about the young African-American women that exist and spirited that poem that you just...
Your nails are always done. Your hair is always done. And in Baltimore, having your hair done can be a Baroque experience, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not just one layer of something happening. There are various layers. It can almost look like hats by the time they finish. Right. And they love this, mm-hmm. okay? And they don't bother to coordinate their clothing with their hair. Like, they'll give the hair that, and the clothing looks like, I just ran to take the trash outside and came right back in the house, mm-hmm. okay? There's this, the thing of having the babies. You want these Escalade strollers, these BMW strollers that are almost too big for functions, mm-hmm. okay? They're overexpensive, all right? But you got them in a kind of rivalry thing because yours has to be better than the one that your girlfriend has, blah, blah, blah. You're doing all of this, and this includes D.C., because D.C. made me write that poem, the neighborhood I live in right now. Mm-hmm. The girls are on one side of the street. The baby daddies, quote unquote, are on the other side of the street, either getting high, you know.
Literally?
Drinking 40s. And if anything female comes in the vicinity, the noses and the tails point in that direction. Mm-hmm. Okay? So they're in relationships, but it's toxic, mm-hmm. okay? It's almost too toxic to even exist, and you can't imagine anything beautiful ever developing out of it, and you immediately send your condolences to their children, mm. okay? Because you know these people don't have, you put the mother and father together, and you still don't have a half a parent that can rear a child in a decent way. You know?
You have a connection with Africa. What is that?
That's my home. Mm-hmm. My ancestral home, my home, period, on any level, that's my home. Mm-hmm. I don't live here. I stay here.
I hear you. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I hear you.
I live in Africa, even though I don't have property or whatever. I live there. Okay? I call myself a Sankofaist. Okay? Sankofa simply means it's all right to go back in time into your history and fetch whatever information that you need to bring into the present that will enable you to deal more effectively with your future, mm-hmm. all right? And I think that's the only way that African people are going to be all right, no matter where they are in the world, is that we do Sankofa. So that's my position. That's my everything, mm-hmm. okay? We can't bring back every single quality or every single deed and don't need to. But we do need to pay attention to those things that when black people were at their very highest, what were we doing? Right. What were we eating? How were we acting? What were we wearing? Can we bring that into this present moment and use that as fuel for whatever it is we think we have to do in the future?
You and I have a few connections. One of them, I remember when you came here 20 years ago, and you were, at the time, I believe when you came, you were working with the artist Michael Brown?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Quite an artist. Quite
yes,
an artist.
He is.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So listeners, check him out. Look his work up. What's the name of his company?
Cultural Circles.
Okay. All right. He's got a power. He's got several powerful pieces. One of them is hanging in my home called Stars and Stripes.
That piece. Okay. Many of us are familiar with the picture of a man named Gordon. You see them in any books or magazines that are talking about our enslavement. And you see him with his back turned toward the camera and the whip marks on his back.
Mm-hmm.
Michael took the whip marks and put them in the shape of the American flag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We happened to be in Georgia for a Black Arts Festival years ago. He walked away from the booth. He left another friend and I there.
Mm-hmm.
I started to walk away from the booth. The relatives of the man in the picture walked up.
Wow.
Recognized their ancestor,
mm-hmm.
said that was who he was,
mm-hmm.
but our friend was such a, I don't want to call him any names. Okay, let's say he just wasn't all there at that moment.
Uh-huh.
He let those people walk away without getting a phone number, an address, or anything.
Oh,
and
no.
He's telling it to us as we come back, and we're like, are you crazy? If it had been me, they would have got one of the limited editions immediately to take home.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, Michael Brown is hot.
Yeah,
He's hot. Yes, he is.
So there's one connection. Another is my father. You knew my father before you even came to D.C. What was the connection there? Was it Charles Duggar?
Yes, and your father's greeting cards. But he and Charles Duggar were, I think, fraternity brothers.
They are.
Okay.
And Charles Duggar is my godfather.
I can see how that would be. I think your mother and father are two of the most wonderful, wonderful, loving people. Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Your father was one of those kind of people. I just wrote something. I posted something yesterday on Facebook about it, about an ordinary man and how a man can look ordinary and then open up his mouth and every word he gets finer and finer and finer.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt like your dad was one of those kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out about him very early was that he cared about women in the genuine way that I had in very few men.
Mm.
Okay, it was never a prelude to getting to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he simply cared about women.
Mm-hmm.
And when you find brothers like that, you don't let them go. You want them in your life some kind of way, your friend, your cousin, you make them a family member if you need to, whatever. So that was what I respected so very much about him. And of course, his work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we worked well together. I did some of the messages for the cards, but I just always had a really healthy and wonderful respect for your dad.
Thank you. He's the first to tell you I've got daughters, and he's got three daughters. He is a self-described mama's boy. So he's got a wife. He's got two ex-wives.
His devotion to his mother.
Yes.
You know, all the time, just awesome.
Yes.
You know, just awesome.
Yes.
You know, and he doesn't. He's the kind of man, he moves quietly and does these things.
Mm-hmm.
There's no announcing, I'm coming out the house now, I'm going to take care of somebody else, you know. I mean, just love
and
love your dad.
Yeah.
Okay, part three.
One of the most profound things, no problem, that I ever heard you say, and this was before I met your parents, was, and I wish I could remember the show, you said, I don't know, the men in my family just love their wives. They just love them. And I thought, that is awesome.
Yes.
That
healthy.
Is awesome. And that it's so apparent that you know it, you own it, and you carry that vibration, I feel. Definitely.
And right. Other people see it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good.
Yes.
Yeah. The third leg is Paul Coates. He has been a guest on the show. If you're a listener, you know, check out his show. He's been a guest. We interviewed him by himself. We also had he gave a few paragraphs. He weighed in on the Muhammad Ali show
sure, right.
after Muhammad Ali passed, and he's also your publisher.
Yes. Right.
So please, what talk about Paul Coates.
Paul Coates is another awesome, awesome, awesome man. We probably met when I was in my 20s in Baltimore, and he had a bookstore across the street from Coppin, State College, I guess it is now, or North Avenue. And, of course, I used to go be in and out of there, you know, the Black Book. Paul told me one day, he says, I'm going to start a publishing company. And I said, good, because I'm not going to send my things to another person until you do. So that means after the album, I was like, I'm not sending my work to anybody that's not Black.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If somebody else is going to use me and take advantage of me again, they're going to be Black people. All right? So I waited 9 years for him to do the publishing company. Mm-hmm. And once he said, okay, I got it, and then he made this commitment. He said, I will publish everything you ever write. And he has been on top of it.
And that's Paul Coates' Black Classic Press.
Yes. Not just my publisher. This was somebody that worried about, you got food in the house. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One morning on my birthday, I'm depressed. 3 o'clock in the morning, I call the house and I'm like, I don't feel like being here anymore. He says, I'm on my way. And then there was a little voice from the person laying next to him who said, I'm coming too.
That's fabulous.
And they sat up with me through the night. You know, I mean, he's another one who always loved women in that real deep, serious kind of way. I'm not planning to use you later on. Mm-hmm. I'm not just here because I want to jump your bones, but I have a serious love for you as women, mm-hmm. as being something different from me and not as something that I want to exploit. So I love him for that, very seriously.
Okay. Next poem. What you got?
And Paul and I are going to do a new book this year, too.
Nice.
Yes.
What's that called?
We'll look forward to it.
I'm going to say the name of it so that he won't have any choice but to let me have my way. he says we always argue and I always win. Okay. The title of the new book is I Was Born With My Hands on My Hips.
Mm. Okay.
I like it.
This is very tiny. It's called Post-Traumatic Slavery Disorder. Letty and Tom had just finished jumping the broom when Master Jake kicked in the door, pushed Tom to the floor, raped Letty, and dared either one of them to speak on it. Three incarnations later, Tom looks at Letty, douses her with memory, and sets her on fire.
Wow.
I almost want to take a moment of silence. Okay. What did you think of, did you see Birth of a Nation?
Yes.
What'd you think?
Good effort.
Mm-hmm.
Good effort. No one's ever going to give me a 10. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to give me a 10. The only way I can get a 10 is if we actually go back in history, film that, and bring it up to the present. All right? So there's always going to be something to complain about, always something that wasn't included. Mm-hmm. Okay? Still, this was a good effort. And then when I heard a descendant of Nat Turner say that he was pleased with it and didn't feel like it deviated, you know, too much from the actual reality, then I felt even a little more better about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Love that he had the heart and the nerve to do that. Mm-hmm. Love that. Okay?
I was talking to Nate Parker a few months ago, and he is working on a film on Hannibal.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Blew my mind.
I hope so. I hope he gets the funding.
Yes.
Okay. Wasn't Will Smith supposed to be working on Taharka?
Yes, he was.
And okay. I haven't heard anything now in several years.
Couldn't because get the support?
I was very excited about it because I was like, oh, he would really work that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yes, I can see what can be done with Hannibal. That is so needed.
Yeah.
Even if it was a silent film,
wow,
it would still be needed because you need those little Black children sitting in those theaters and getting the imagery of how great their own ancestors have been.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and that is his mission, to create powerful images of Black people, and that's what he sat and told me. And when he told me about the Hannibal piece, add that to the one he did to Nat Turner, and I'm just like,
I'm so supportive of that.
That would be incredible.
So supportive of that.
Yes. Okay, give me something else. What you got?
Madonna auditions for Madea. Madonna said, she looked into that little black boy's eyes and they made a connection. The queen of Never Was a Virgin, having somehow blown the opportunity for a colorful birth, has been working the fringes of melanin all her life. Delusions of Exotica dancing in her head, she discovered Alvin Ailey, whose expertise allowed her to peek through a window into black world to see what she'd been missing. Next thing you know, she was in a video sleazing around in a Baptist church setting, black choir wailing in the background while she and Leon did their mating dance. But that didn't lessen the longing to be black. So her personal life took on more notoriety than her performances. She screwed Dennis Rodman's brains out till he was so conflicted, didn't know whether to suit up or don a wedding dress. And now she's gone slumming in Malawi and found herself a black baby. She said, she looked into that little black boy's eyes and they made a connection. Well, what kind of connection? Like Madonna and child, mistress and slave, owner and pet? Or did she feel a connection between her wealth and his poverty? Customized viruses and demonic economics killed the child's mother and other siblings. The father was so traumatized, he let her take his remaining son, not to keep forever, but just till he could get back up on his feet. He didn't know her intentions. He thought she was a humanitarian, and she must have thought he was a fool because healthy Africans do not give away their children. And she said, she looked into that little black boy's eyes, and they made a connection. Something her immaculately white conception denied could be symbolically had by taking possession of a black soul. She had no problem separating that child from every black influence in his life, even went so far as to invite others to visit that same country where she guaranteed they would be moved to charity. If she cared anything about African people, she could have sponsored one of the father's dreams and became a part of the solid ground under his family's feet. If she wanted to take the child to the Wild Wild West, she could have offered the father a live-in job on her estate, thus pulling both of them up out of the pit that white supremacy cast them into. White folks can't bestow charity on Africans because everything they give, they already owe. And she said, she looked into that little black boy's eyes, and they made a connection. She was thinking, oh, I have just got to have you. And he was thinking, yeah, that's what your ancestors said.
Well, all right. You have discussed a scarcity of quality black men. Not black men, but a scarcity of quality black men. Mm-hmm. Please, you know, the floor is yours. Share.
Okay. Also, with the supposed absence of a quality black men, there is a ignorance of what a quality black man is mm-hmm. among the women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You hear the women all the time, I just want a good man. I want a man that's for real. And not one thing on her body is real.
Mm.
But she's asking for something that's for real. How would she even know what that is? Okay. We want men that are fine, men who excite us, you know, men with good jobs, men who have this, who have that. That plain or ordinary brother that's working on that garbage truck, okay, who gets paid every 2 weeks, you know, pays his bills and takes care of his business, fences, is not what most sisters are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion was, you need to look in your neighborhood, look at the people right next door to you, look at the people in your building, okay? Change your lens of how you see them. Because there is quality there, you simply may not be perceptive enough to see it. Or you may not be strong enough or willing enough to pull it up to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we got to work with one another here. Okay, I've heard men say the same thing.
Yeah.
That they couldn't find quality women.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we have to define what that is, and then we have to train ourselves to be that.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're talking with writer and poet Laini Mutaka. Her work includes Never as Strangers, Restoring the Queen, Being a Strong Black Woman Can Get You Killed, and The Prince of Kokomo. She also has an album called Black Ivory under the name Wanda
Robinson.
Mama Laini, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
Okay, I'm trying to put two books out this year.
Okay. You've shared one of them.
Yes, and I didn't take the other one to Paul
I haven't even shown it to him yet because it's a book of quotations. And I didn't know whether he wanted to be bothered with quotations, okay? It's about 400 of them. I'm mm-hmm. very surprised that I had that many laying around. Mm-hmm. So the possible name of the book is I Say What You Whisper.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of that kind of statements in there. Every line can't be a poem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you get these one-liners sometimes that are just so fantastic,
and
you can't
complete.
Throw them away.
Yeah.
Yes,
right.
All by themselves. Right. Yeah. So right. It's like, okay, I have to do something with this. And finally, that's what I'm doing with that one particular book.
So, Brother Coach, you heard it here first. She's got a book of quotes that's coming your way.
Yes.
She's not sure whether you're going to.
I told him I would do
he'd
it myself.
Love to see it.
I just thought of that because I took the opportunity away from him by saying I wanted to publish it myself. I was so afraid that he would not want to that right. I didn't even get him a chance to say he didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to have to go back and just let him take a look at it because he might decide that he likes it as well. I can't believe what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. You know how you just can't believe, like, did I say that? Did I really say that? Yeah.
So they're all your quotes? Not
yes, they're all mine.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all mine.
All right. You have said it's important for men to like the women they sleep with and not sleep with the women they don't like.
And the same thing is true of women.
Okay, go.
Okay, okay, I know you didn't ask me this. I'm going to go there anyway.
Go.
A lot of times when we think about pedophiles, okay,
yes.
We're always thinking about men dealing with younger children.
Mm-hmm.
Women can be pedophiles, but because of this kind of standard set for men, any sex that a man gets is supposed to be all right, okay? Because that's supposed to kind of like be his job, to want sex,
that's
to go
arena.
Out, to get sex, mm-hmm. to conquer, you know? So any escapades that he has makes him more of a man, mm-hmm. all right? So you could take a 14-year-old in a classroom where his teacher has stepped to him and kind of convinced him that everything is all right, and she winds up sleeping with him. That young man is probably not going to go and tell people, I've been molested.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to pat himself on the back, maybe tell his friends, man, listen to what I did.
Right.
When really, she was a pedophile, okay? Mm-hmm. And what she did was violate him.
Mm-hmm.
And she should be dealt with in some kind of way, okay? So, we are so, okay, here's one of the quotes. The only thing we know about sex, we learned from the people who raped us until we were a different color.
Hmm. Okay.
That's the only thing we know. That's why Sankofa is so important. Let's go back and see what our ancient ancestors thought about sex. Did they like one-night stands? Did they believe they were supposed to go sleep with people before they knew their names? And the people gone and they still don't know their names? No. They took it so much more deeply than we do here. America has a problem with sex. The way it defines it, the way it accepts it, the way it projects it, all are unhealthy, you know? So we're following somebody else's stuff
mm-hmm.
by thinking it's all right to sleep with anybody you want, sleep with as many people as you want. You're taking the most precious part of you and you're giving it to somebody you don't even know.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You don't even know whether the person is clean or
yeah.
just anything. Okay? We seriously have to move away from that. And women who think that they're doing good because they can get it whenever they feel like it, and men who feel the same way, you are so lying to yourself because all you're getting is emptiness.
Mm.
Okay? So to me, if you're having sex and you've never been in love, you're still a virgin.
Wow.
You don't even know what you're doing.
The death of a strong black woman. How'd she die?
She was murdered by circumstances and people who always wanted her to be so strong that she couldn't lean, she couldn't scream, she couldn't holler, she couldn't do anything but carry people. When, I find this to be true too, when somebody comes up to you and they're talking to you and they was like, you are so strong. That is what we say when we get ready to dump on somebody.
Right.
When we get ready, you know what I'm saying? When we get ready
to
tell them all our problems. Yeah, I don't want
to
hear that either.
I don't want to hear it.
Okay? Because you're getting ready to give all your stuff to me instead of you carrying it yourself. So what the black woman has to understand is you don't do more for people than is expected of you.
Hmm.
I got that from Sufism when I was 20. I wrote a great big circle in the book and said, that's selfish. That's mean. I don't like this. I come back and read it again a couple years and went, boy, that sure was smart. I sure hope I got that down. Because you got to let other people do their own work.
Yes,
do their own
do.
Growing, learn their own lessons, carry their own pain. You got to let other people carry their stuff. You can help, but you cannot do it for them.
Share that quote one more time.
Never do more for people than is expected of you.
Okay.
Yeah.
In your development as a writer, you have noted that you found it was necessary to become more responsible for what you had to say. And how did that come about?
It comes about when...
Where were you? And, you know, where were you initially? And, yeah, how did it come about where you felt like that's where you needed to get to?
I think I may have heard someone take one of the poems and do something else with it other than what I intended. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, wow, once I write these things, my control is gone. I can't say, you absolutely have to hear it this way or you have to perceive it this way. People can take your work and do whatever they want to do with it. So I have to be as definite as I possibly can be, as specific as I possibly can be. And there's certain things that won't be in this new book. There's probably absolutely no profanity coming in this new book. Mm-hmm. Why am I not doing that anymore? As a writer, I know how to use it. I know a respectable way to use it, but I can't stand hearing children curse. Mm-hmm. And if I can't stand to hear them, then that it can't come out my mouth. It shouldn't be in my books because they can't point to me. They shouldn't be able to point to me as where they got this language from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's things like that. And just the sexual language in the books, that probably won't be happening anymore. But then I'm much older now, too. Some of them I may never read again, you know, because that's how a 20-year-old might sound. And it's probably not going to sound as respectful coming out of me at this age because I'm an elder now, not an older, but an elder. And I'm aware of that because there's a difference. And it's being responsible that makes me the elder. And not the older.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You have a poem called A Trip All Sisters Must Take.
Yes.
Now, I get the impression that you've touched on what some of that poem captures when you were discussing what black women, how black women and black men of quality may connect. Mm-hmm. But is there more?
A lot
well,
more.
In that particular poem, it was just a list of all the things that women do while they're waiting for that man.
Can you tell us some of those things?
You get high. You drink.
Mm-hmm.
You go to clubs. You go to these little workshops that people are starting to use to exploit your singleness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You look at other people's men. If you really go out on a limit, you might even start looking at women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you just can't be able to be alone, you know. You're looking at younger men. You're looking at people in other races, you know. You want somebody. It's as if we were promised that, okay? The mythology, as we're coming up, is there's somebody for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to know, where's your person? Why is he late? What's wrong? I've done everything I know to do. You have money, you have your own home, you have a great job, and you don't have a man. You can't make your mind accept that. Your mind doesn't understand that. It says, well, we've done all the things to qualify. Where's my man? Okay, so that's what that poem was about.
What's your take on man sharing, polygamy, that sort of thing?
I don't have a problem with it. I've never had a problem with it now that I think about it, but only because of some very special circumstances. I had a girlfriend when I was young. I'm maybe a year older, maybe let's say I'm about 15 or 16. I have this little boyfriend, it lasts a couple of minutes, then he's looking at her. We grew up in the neighborhood together, we're neighborhood friends. She comes to me and she says, he likes me, what can I do? I said, you like him? She said, yeah. And I said, go ahead. But she came to me first.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's profound.
Yes, it is. And she actually gets pregnant by this guy.
Mm-hmm.
While he's kind of out in the street,
I'm with her during the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we kind of doing that together, mm-hmm. because the decision was made, don't ever stop being friends behind him.
Right.
We always got along before he came. Let us never let him destroy. Get in and damage what is our relationship. So learning that in the teens prepared me for those kind of situations as I got older. And I've had sisters who I was so close to that the two of us could have walked up to one man and said, would you marry us?
That's bombing.
You know?
Yeah.
Because we knew we could get along in the household. And if we could find a man who could get along with both of us, mm-hmm. then we would be in heaven.
And ultimately, recently I've been thinking, well, what is the point of having multiple partners if there's not an alliance between all the partners? That's what makes it real. And, you know, an authentic...
And lasting.
And lasting mm-hmm. unit.
Yes.
And so to say, you know, in a situation where, whether it's a man who has a collection of women or a woman who's with more than one man, that, oh, well, you don't know everybody involved. And I can't see promoting, say a man says, well, you know, I got this monster vision and I need more than one woman to help me take it to the next level. And, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And if I can get what I want, or everybody gets what they want, but the women aren't on board. That's caca.
I've seen men who had a variety of women and handled it. Very few.
Handled it. Yes.
It's usually, a lot of this came out of my grandfather's time. Well, gee, now that we're talking about him, he was one of them. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Okay.
My grandfather had a separate family that may have been less than 10 blocks away. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know until he died. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Wow.
So there's like maybe 5 or 6 children in our household because I'm raised by the grandparents.
Sure.
But there was one for each one in the other household. Mm-hmm. Okay? Nobody went hungry. This is the time when men could be merchant marines. So that's what he was. Mm-hmm. Always had a job. And my youngest uncle said, yeah, he would take me over there. Like, once we got a Christmas tree here, then he would take me out and we would go get another Christmas tree to take it to the other people.
Wow. Okay. Uh-huh. So he was the only one that knew.
Yes.
Yes. He kept it.
Yes, he did.
He honored his privacy.
Yeah, for a long time. Mm-hmm. For a very, very long time. So, and I don't remember any neglect. Mm-hmm. In my grandfather's house, mm-hmm. okay? The unfortunate part was he was murdered behind this other woman.
Oh.
Behind, explain that.
He went to her home to see her. There was another man there, well, two, guy's friend. They got into an altercation. My grandfather was like, don't be here when I get back. I don't know if you've ever read the book, Standing at the Scratch Line.
I am familiar with it. That's Maya Angelou's son.
Yes.
Guy.
My grandfather, Guy Johnson.
Guy Johnson.
My grandfather was that kind of man.
Okay.
He was a fighter. Mm-hmm. Serious Ogun and Adadeko for energy. Okay. Mm. So he says, don't be here when I get back. Unfortunately, he was drinking. If he hadn't been drinking, he'd still be alive. So he was drinking. When he came back, they killed him.
Wow.
Because it was two of them and one of him. But on a sober day, it would have been two dead men. Mm. Okay? So I learned that whole having women thing, all of that, from the men in my family, watching how they dealt with that. And some of them didn't deal with it well. Mm. The only time that I've ever seen the women in those situations not get along well is when the man did not handle things properly. But when that man handled things the way he was supposed to and made each one of them feel like they were worthy of whatever caring he was giving them, and we're not even talking about sex here, mm-hmm. okay? Right. Those women take on a more sisterly attitude towards one another, okay? And a more family attitude, you know, including the man. So it can be done. It can be done.
I don't even think that I need to ask you, did you see it? So when I say it, I'm referring to either the play or the movie, but so what'd you think about Fences?
I adored it. I adored that movie. I cried all through that movie because I was like, oh my God, there's Uncle Theodore. Oh my God, there's my Aunt Leola. Oh man, isn't that cousin so-and-so? The men in my family were popping out mm-hmm. as I saw that film. I loved it.
Yeah. I really did. I thought it was an extremely great piece of work. But I'm a Denzel fan. Mm-hmm. And not just in that non-critical kind of way. Mm-hmm. I think he has brought us some of the best work there is. So when people get mad about Training Day, mm-hmm. I ain't mad about Training Day. Do you understand how good he was in Training Day? Right? I wanted him to die.
Mm-hmm.
I screamed out loud in the movie, will somebody kill him? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this is my favorite man. So mm-hmm. if I'm asking for him to die, that shows how good a performance it was. Mm-hmm. Right? And you're not in charge of what work you do that gets awards.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think he was supposed to say, no, I won't take it because this was a junkie film? No, he was supposed to say, thank you, and go on about his business and do what he does. But that, Fences, I told everybody I could think of to go see it. Then I even posted it on Facebook. Please go see that movie.
So what about the objections you get maybe from women about the situation with him telling Rose about the woman that he's not giving her up? And
well, my loving it does not mean that I co-signed every single conversation because that was horrendous, okay? And I knew she was supposed to be super articulate in her response to that, and she was.
She was.
Yes. She was, okay? Yes. But she spoke for so many women.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I could hear her speaking for my grandmother, you know, saying, well, why does it have to be somebody else? You know, my grandfather ripped up the telephone out of the wall because my grandmother said, you're not calling another woman on this telephone. So he ripped the phone out. So this was their time, and they were that kind of people, mm-hmm. you know. It was just her taking the child. Of course she was going to take that child. All the women that I knew of that time period would have taken
the
that
same
child.
Thing. Yes.
You know,
yes.
And no announcements and parades, you know, and honors and stuff because that's how we feel about one another. We always talk about what's wrong with us, but those good things, that glue that always keeps us together, we seldom talk about it because sometimes we can't even define it or articulate it, but it is there. It is so, so there, you know.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with writer and poet Laini Mataka. Once again, her works include Never as Strangers, Restoring the Queen, Being a Strong Black Woman Can Get You Killed, and The Prince of Kokomo. She also has an album, Black Ivory, under the name Wanda Robinson.
Yeah, there's another album too, but I don't claim it. Look, when people take things that you threw in the trash can and put an album together and put it in the store and you don't even know it.
Oh, wow.
Because that's what stuff you threw away. You just didn't understand what threw away meant in that industry. Okay, mm-hmm. So there was something in the store, and somebody called and said, you know, you got another album? I'm like, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. Bam, there it was. Right. I've never even heard it, the whole thing. I couldn't even.
And you have no rights to it.
I couldn't bear to listen to it.
Wow.
You know.
Deep.
Mama Laini, one more time, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
I am on Facebook. Where else can you find me? Ooh, let me do this real fast.
Hit it.
I heard there's a hip-hop documentary. Mm-hmm. And African Bambaataa is like the narrator. And somebody mm-hmm. couldn't wait to pull it up to my face to show me when he says, there have been rappers here before y'all who think you're doing rap right now. He said, there was Gil Scott, there was Sonya Sanchez, and there was Wanda Robinson. And I was like, oh,
whoa.
My God. Oh, my God. Somebody was paying attention.
Somebody's so paying attention.
That was powerful. That made me feel very, very good.
Then
very
and now. Mm-hmm. Along today's journey, we've discussed the good old city, Baltimore.
Yeah. Watch your mouth, Frank.
Quality black men and the death of the strong black woman. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thanks to my engineer, Jeff Newman. And thank you to my guest.
Thank you.
Laini Mataka. You've been great. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr., that's M-R Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, please make sure you like us there. And if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.